You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We turn now to Michigan Radio senior political analyst Jack Lessenberry. What do you make of Conyers' decision today? Is this a resignation or a retirement?
Well, you know, we really don't know what it is. He said he was going to announce retirement plans. Then when they said, Mildred Gaddis pressed him for more information, he said he was resigning today. But nobody has seen a letter yet. I just talked to another congressman, don't want to say who it is, who said that she was just scratching her head because until he writes a letter, he's not officially resigned. And given that it's John Conyers, a very mercurial person, we really don't know anything. But it's clear that his career is coming to an end as far as we can tell right now.
And you have come out with some pretty strongly worded opinion pieces saying it is time for that career to end.
Well, yes. And, you know, I've had personal knowledge of these allegations. Plus, on top of that, he's 88. He's not the man he used to be. This is another factor. This is sort of a backdrop that people are concerned about his competence, quite apart from, you know, the serious sexual harassment matters. And so if the Democrats, for example, were to have taken control of Congress in 2018, he would not be in shape to be chair of the House Judiciary Committee again. So for all these reasons, people think it's time for him to retire. And he's apparently doing that. But again, we haven't seen a letter of resignation. And the most puzzling thing about this was his surprise announcement that he intends to pass the seat on to his son.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a moment. First, I got to ask you, though, Jack, what about due process? There are a lot of people, especially supporters of the congressman, calling for all the allegations to be taken seriously and investigated before any decision should be made. Why should we not have waited for due process to run its course?
That's a very good question. And I think in a lot of these cases, we have been rushing to judgment. But there's a number of other factors. For one thing, we know that Conyers, after initially denying it, we know he settled out of court. He had a legal settlement with one of these women for sexual harassment, although he initially denied it. And there's also politics involved in this, and these are the politics of it. If they wanted to expel him from Congress, that would take a long time. The House Ethics Committee would have to name a subcommittee. You would have hearings. And then you would have to have a two-thirds vote in the Congress. This would drag on. And Democrats who want to spend next year running against Trump and running against the Trump tax effects on the middle class, they would be forced to be dealing with this. They would risk alienating the African-American community, a lot of whom still revere Conyers, who, you know, is a sort of a civil rights icon. And it also would just distract them from what they want to talk about. So there's a lot of people who have a vested interest, in this case especially, of getting it behind them.
So much of the focus has been on allegations of the sexual misconduct, but we've also heard of allegations of forcing federal employees to do campaign work and babysit his kids and tutor his wife, Monica, in her law school studies, all in the public dime. And yet, as we all remember, another Detroit congressman, Charles Diggs, he wound up doing time in prison for making his federal staffers work in his funeral home on the public dime. So why do you think major news outlets in Congress and federal prosecutors didn't act on these longtime accusations before this? Why was John Conyers more untouchable than Charles Diggs?
This is a very good question, but in fact, it is the case. Now, Conyers had more of a civil rights profile, although Charles Diggs went down to Mississippi for the Emmett Till trial. But it could be that the Charles Diggs thing was sort of an open and shut case of using people to advance your commercial business interest. Conyers wasn't doing that, as far as I know. He was just using them as sort of servants. And they also may politically have been timid about going after somebody who he was a founder of the Congressional Black Caucus. And Democrats sometimes have been very hesitant. You know, the Democratic Party is a bunch of coalition groups. It's a coalition of different groups, African-Americans, labor groups, women, and they were frightened of alienating African-Americans. When African-Americans don't turn out to vote in large numbers, Democrats have little or no chance of winning. So this could have been a factor, and some of it just escapes me because all this stuff was on the record. People, Joel Sertell, who is a very good investigative reporter, was working for the Free Press at the time, detailed a lot of these babysitting and outrageous use of people for personal errands kinds of things, and yet nothing was ever done.
So as you mentioned, Jack, the congressman is endorsing his son, John Conyers III, to replace him. And at the same time, his great-nephew, State Senator Ian Conyers, is saying he plans to run. How qualified are these two for the job?
Well, Ian Conyers is at least in the state Senate. And the people who I do not know him, the people who know him have a fairly high regard for him, so much so that there was even some discussion about him as a potential candidate for lieutenant governor. But his son, I don't know anything about his son. He's only about 25 or 26. I don't know what he does. He doesn't have any profile. It's sort of an open secret that Monica Conyers became pregnant. She was an intern in John Conyers' office, and he married her before the baby was born. But this is sort of the mystery that here's this young man who has not had any kind of public profile. This is the older of the congressman's two sons. And it must be said, the congressman seems to me to be a very good father, cares very much about his sons. He once came to me in my capacity as a professor to ask advice about his son in college and things like that, which I was very happy to talk to him about. But it seems to me that this is not anybody who's been in the legislature. And I think, you know, we should not be inheriting congressional seats. We have, and this is not peculiar to Conyers. We have Sandra Levin, who's retiring, his son Andy, who hasn't really been in politics, clearly wants to run for his seat. We have Dan Kildee succeeding Dale Kildee. We have the Bushes. We have the Clintons. Somehow, I think if the Founding Fathers could come back, they might look at this and say, what happened to the American Revolution?
How will you remember John Conyers?
I will remember John Conyers as a man who, at his best, stood for civil rights, who was a champion of jazz, who focused the nation's attention on jazz, who was not afraid to speak out. John Conyers was against the Vietnam War before that was popular. He called for Nixon's impeachment before Watergate. And on both of those things, he was right before other people were right. But again, he will also be remembered, sadly, as a man who stayed there too long, who stayed in Congress too long, and who may have sort of, it is, you know, this saying about power corrupting absolutely. It seems that, based on what we know, that John Conyers began to think that he could behave in a manner that wasn't right, that he was sort of the king of the civil fiefdom and could use people, quite apart from the sexual harassment allegations, could use people to do things that were just not appropriate. And I think there's a lesson in there for all of us.
Michigan Radio senior political analyst Jack Lessenberry. As always, Jack, thank you so much.
My pleasure.